You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 25th, 2009, episode number 60, Technology Planning, Maui Style. It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. First of all, thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in once again. And we welcome back, as always, my co-host, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye. Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. You sound perky and chipper today.
Yep, I'm ready for a great show.
Are you? Well, hopefully we can deliver. And I'm sure we can because we have our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent who's joining us every month for one of our shows where we focus on classroom technology, Gail Potratz. Welcome, Gail.
Hello. Hello, Martin, and hello, Sally, this morning. I'm excited and ready to go.
Good. And you're joining us from a Milwaukee suburb today. So you made the long trip down from Appleton, or
yes,
from the Appleton area.
Right.
New London, in particular.
Yeah.
And you're at your daughter's house on with the wonders of Skype. You can really be anywhere.
That's right. That's right. You wouldn't even know I was missing. You could talk to me here and you'd think I was still working in New London.
That's right. Not that Menominee Falls and New London are that far apart. There's snow on the ground in both places.
Yes, there is.
It would have been a little bit different if you're coming to us from Maui, right?
That would have been a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe we should do one of those shows. I think we could. Can we squeeze that out of the Wells Tech budget, Sally?
Yeah.
A trip to Maui?
I think we're good with that, Martin.
We're going to have to sell a lot of Wells Tech coffee cups to get ourselves to Maui. Yeah. All right. Why don't we get right into it? I think the topic that we've chosen today is very relevant. It may not be all that exciting, at least from my perspective. We're going to talk about planning. As far as the school is concerned, what needs to go into everything before you actually do this cool stuff with technology? And why I say it's not all that glamorous is because, well, it's hard work. And maybe the first question that we should ask when we're talking about planning for technology within the school, and I think there's application on the church side too, is why a plan? That's probably the big question. Why do you need to plan? And I've heard all the cliches. We've all heard all the cliches about planning the work, working the plan, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to technology, why plan?
I think off the bat, Martin, that you want to not fly by the seat of your pants, but have some direction.
Mm-hmm.
Just map out a direction. What are your goals? What are your objectives with your technology initiatives in the school? So, you know, just a core reason is just to map a direction that you want to head in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, direction is very necessary, and I think it's especially important in this area because you really need to justify all those technology dollars that you're stakeholders, which in this case your congregation is putting towards this effort. So planning is good stewardship in that sense, and also gives you something to assess, to go back and evaluate and show your people that this is indeed doing what we hoped it would do for us.
Yeah, as much as we talk about all the free stuff and all the cool things you can do for little or no money, technology still comes with a cost. Not many people are giving away free computers, and those that get free computers in their school labs or whatever, you know, wind up paying for it on the other end with maintenance and all kinds of other things. So it's absolutely essential that you have a plan going in and you recognize that it will cost, you know, a certain number of dollars, and that needs to be budgeted for, and ultimately it needs to be justified and explained to the congregation. Those people are giving up of their offerings to support this ministry, and we can never forget this is a ministry, and we have to be wise stewards of the resources that God has given to us. And it's not just the money and justifying the spending, it's the effective use of the technology once you've got it. I've seen lots of scenarios where congregations and schools have purchased equipment and then used them very ineffectively and inefficiently, and they just kind of, you know, die on the vine for lack of a plan that was good intentions to start with, but ultimately they weren't well used.
Right, and I think I'm sorry, Gail. Go ahead.
we're both.
We don't stand on protocol here. Just jump in. Whoever's loudest and squeakiest, you go.
Well, now I forgot what I was going to say.
I guess that's your cue, no. Sally.
Well, I was just going to say that the different opportunities to get outside funding as well often require a plan. So things like the E-Rate program, which I believe is a federal program, requires you to have a technology plan in place and to meet certain criteria with your technology plan. So by having a plan, you may qualify for some additional funding for your technology budget.
For sure.
Right. And I think that's why actually many people started. I know that 11 years ago when we started doing some big-time planning for technology, it was in connection with the E-Rate and the Wisconsin Teach Initiative in order to satisfy, we needed an approved plan. So you can talk about planning on your own, but these plans that require state approval, you know, then can be used for government and state funding. So that was an initiative on for right or for wrong, it caused people to be more innovative,
right?
And more strategic in the way that they planned. So it was really a good thing when that had to have approval idea came out, I think. It was good motivation.
Yeah, and the last thing that I can think of when you're thinking about why a plan is our schools are under increasing pressure, I think, from the public sector, where they're getting federal and state funds, and they are forced to do these plans as well. And ultimately, if we aren't, and it's sad to say, if we're not keeping up with the Joneses, we are losing opportunities to invite children who might come to our school or are going to make a choice of going to the public school because they've got more things to offer in the area of technology. And we talk about things like student information systems and having grades online, and all of those things, I think, go into the mix as far as what a congregation and a school needs to think about if they're going to stay competitive in an increasingly competitive landscape. So let's talk a little bit about the plan itself. There's, I think, some challenges inherent to a school or church writing a technology plan. So who writes the plan?
Well, I think Gail said it's real important that you assign it to just one person and not let anybody else have any input. Is that right, Gail?
Yeah, that's right. The technology coordinator should be the only one who knows what's in there.
Okay, so we take all that back. Huh?
Yeah. In all reality, I think many of us have erred in that point for the sake of expediency. You have some people, one usually, and this is not just on the grade school level, but I know the high school level as well. Sometimes it happens where, you know, it's just expedient, and that after all, that person knows the most about the technology, so it falls into their lap, and that is absolutely the wrong way to do it. You should be getting a committee together. You want a committee of your stakeholders, a parent, even a student. Mm-hmm. Student, parents, pastors. Our technology plan includes the church and the school together, by the way.
Cool. Very good.
Yeah. And so, and some people will be technology experts, maybe. Some people will be just very interested parties that are excited about technology in their building. And some won't maybe know much about technology, but they're good organizers, good committee people, and can make things happen. So,
Right.
We need to move toward that more. I know in my situation, and I've been around enough to know that I'm not alone in that situation.
Yeah, the one thing that stands out to me when I advise congregations to form technology committees is you need passionate people who really care. And that characteristic in a committee member is going to manifest itself in their commitment, obviously, to attending committee meetings and to doing the drudge work like building a plan. But also they serve as good role models and mentors and people who serve as great examples for others to say, hey, this is important stuff, and I think they're inspirational to a certain degree.
Right. And speaking of other people, you always want to, and I see this happen all the time, just this last week, an example where folks that are beginning to move in a certain direction in technology and want to know what the best way to go might be, visit other schools. Go visit, mm-hmm. be on site and ask those people questions. Share, you know, share the wealth. We can really help each other with vision when it comes to technology in a local setting, or since we have Skype at our beck and call now, you could even do that, mm-hmm. you know, long distance. But I think there's real value to actually seeing something in action. You know, go to some place near you that you think is doing well or aspiring well, and visit and ask.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe there's a school in Maui. What do you guys think?
I know there must be. I've been waiting for a call there for years.
There you go. I just wanted to relate a little bit of practical experience in this regard. Last spring, I guess, we were looking at making some major computer purchases here in Sleepy Eye, and we put together a committee just to look at that particular initiative. And we drew in people, just like you're saying, from all different areas. We had the teacher representatives and the business people and the parents and all of that. And it turned out to be just a really positive thing. One of our businessmen donated a super heavy-duty server to the school for free, because as we were discussing it, one of the costs was a server cost. And he's like, you know, I can just take care of that. So mm-hmm. you never know what might come out of some of these committees with some of these really gifted people involved. So
there's that passion, you know, people that really care. So that's wonderful. So what's in the plan at this point? So we've talked about who writes the plan. What are the components of a good technology plan from a school perspective?
Well, there are different ways that you can do the planning. Again, I happen to, since when I started the Wells system for approval wasn't really in place yet, so I went through the Wisconsin Department of Instruction. Mm-hmm. And so my plan kind of goes along with the way they have a suggested plan, that, you know, an outline to follow, so to speak. Uh-huh. And I've always used that and stuck with that. And I send it, though, to the Wells now instead of the DPI, but that's the form I use. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much the same, but the Wells also has provided us in the past with a good outline or form to follow for what's included. And if you look at those things, you'll see things like not only procuring the equipment, but plans always start out with a philosophy. You know, what is your philosophy of technology in your building? And I think that is so neat to visit that whenever you write the plan again. Ours is a 3-year plan. Our philosophy has not changed much at all since day one. So I think that's pretty neat. We're sticking to the plan, and we haven't seen a reason really to change our philosophy.
So, for example, Gail, what is your philosophy? Can you capitalize it?
Our philosophy basically is that we see technology as a gift of God to be used as a tool in instruction, mm-hmm. and ministry, and that integrating the technology into our instruction on a daily basis, moving toward a seamless use of technology, is our goal.
Gone are the days where you've got the computer lab and you say, now it's technology time. Let's all go to the computer lab and we'll learn how to type. That's a little bit different today.
Yeah, we've never done that, and we've stuck with that, and I'm thankful that we had that start. We had a very good person on the Board of Education who was in the business banking world, who really encouraged us in setting our mission statement and our philosophy, and helped us do that and did a good job.
Doesn't that make it harder, though? You have many more moving parts when you've got that kind of philosophy, where you're integrating and trying to make this a seamless experience, because technology is obviously changing all the time. Plus, you have staffing issues, too. Now your entire faculty has to be up to speed, you know, as you move forward through your plan, you've got to make sure that you're planning with them in mind.
Yeah, and I have to say that's probably the biggest challenge is to, first of all, you know, get everybody to buy in to the philosophy.
Everybody meaning the faculty?
Right, uh-huh. The staff, the faculty and staff, and the school and church faculty and staff really are the ideal goal that everybody, the church people don't need to understand everything that goes on in the school, mm-hmm. you know, line by line, but the philosophy I think everyone needs to be aware of and working toward. The seamless use of technology applies, you know, on the church side as well as it does at the school side. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, it's education, education, education. We need to train. We need to do staff development. Part of the plan is planning for how that's going to take place.
Right.
Even down to the, okay, who's, let's say you're going to plan 8 faculty in services during the course of the year. Who's going to do them? When is it going to be done? Try to line that stuff up in a pattern. Work with the administrative people to get that set up ahead of time. That's where we break down a lot because everybody's schedules are crazy, and to try to get people together to do this stuff. Last summer, I started just offering during the summer, okay, this is the summer schedule, and I picked three topics, and people came if they wanted to or they didn't have to come. And I'm going to offer those same 3 again pretty soon in the spring, even during the school year, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. They were well attended by the same people every time.
Do you find that the younger teachers coming in are a little easier to integrate into this process, or really is age not matter? It's more just an affinity for it and a desire to do it.
I think it doesn't really have that much to do with age. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does, but I've seen examples of both.
Okay.
I think what it really comes down to is on the education side is your mindset as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of a teacher you are. There's different models of how people teach, and a person that is a very structured, you know, day by day, hour by hour, detail kind of person finds it hard to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's good things about their mindset, but you have to be a little bit more flexible and willing to try things, willing to fail, not being afraid that the kids know more than you do about some things. So that's a big hang-up for some people,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the kids have to lead them. Man, I don't care. I think that's great, but it is a hang-up for a lot of people. So. Yeah, so, faculty training.
When we were talking about all this faculty training, one of the things that you shared with us is that you guys use an assessment tool to just get a feel for where the faculty is and you know, progress mm-hmm. over time and that kind of thing. So hopefully we're going to get into that a little bit and be able to share that link with our listeners as well.
Tell us a little bit about
right.
that. Yeah.
Right. I think if you do have a plan and you're moving towards something, it's important to assess, you know, first of all, look at your plan and see, you can just read through the plan and go, you know, oh, we're there. We did that. Oh, we're partway there. You know, it should be a working document so that you have it out in front of you, you know, or you lose sight of it mm-hmm. in the daily grind, you know, of the daily decision making you do. So assessing is important. And the LODI tool, it used to be called Levels of Technology Instruction, LOTI. Now, as of last year, they changed their name to Learning, let me think. Let me just look. I have it here. Learning something about innovation, Levels of Innovation.
Still the same acronym, LOTI. It,
right.
Levels,
but they
of loving, the, levels of teaching innovation, right?
Yeah, that's okay. it. Levels right. of teaching innovation. Mm-hmm. So they've made the shift in their name even to get away from this idea of we're not trying to teach people how to use how to do technology, which they never really did. They're always a big integration mm-hmm. place. But now they've really, with the title, even emphasized the importance of the teacher being innovative with the use of technology. This is a great site. You can go to this site, I think Sally has it in the show notes, right?
We will.
Yes,
right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. And this will, you can take an assessment. All your teachers take an online assessment. That's free. So you can take, it's like a 50-question survey, and it assesses your skills in technology, how you use technology for yourself. Because as I read a blog the other day from Warwick, I think he was talking about the sad fact that most teachers are really good users of technology in using the internet and email for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we want to by now be branching out more than that. So this will test your basic skills and skills with basic applications, but it will also ask questions that help you determine your teaching style, how much you involve student-directed instruction, for example, mm-hmm. How much integration. You know, they have the questions posed, so you just answer them as honestly as they can, and then they come out with a number at the end, a category, if you will. And so then teachers have something to move toward. You know, I want to get better. I'm a 2. I want to be a 4 by in the next 3 years. And to do this, they have online lessons and things that you can look toward to get help.
Very cool.
So it's a cool site. And if you want to pay some money, then they will send you some really nice graphs. And we've always done this because it used to be like $7.50 a person for a while. And that's not too bad. And they send you some graphs that graph you as a person, your school, all kinds of really telling graphs that were helpful to us in assessing where we are and where we need to move. So, yeah, that's a very cool tool. There are others out there, but this is one I'm most familiar with because it's the one that we've used.
So, obviously, a lot of components that can go into a technology plan. Assessment is a big part of that. Determining what your objectives are and measuring how you're doing against the plan on a regular basis. Maybe one last question before we jump into our picks. How long of time period should you plan for, Gail or Sally, when you're building a technology plan for school? What's your advice there?
Here we go again. I think we should build it and file it away and let it be in the drawer.
Right.
No,
right.
Probably not even assigning a time frame is a good idea, but certainly making it a working document, even if it's for a 3-year period or whatever, go back and revisit it and don't be afraid to update it even during that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Right. 3 is kind of a standard just because of the approval. You know, the state approval is a 3-year rotation. So they know when your approval, is gone for another 3 years and you need to renew. So that's what's kind of put us onto the three-year cycle. Actually, going through it, you know, what, 3 or more times now, it really, I think it's a good number. 1 year goes way too fast, you know. And so in our plan, we have like the 3 years in the columns we use in the plan. I break it into the 3 years, you know, this year, the next year, and the following year. And I divide up the actual things we probably are going to purchase and what we're going to do with them, and what we're thinking about buying in the 3rd year. We're looking at voice IP. Maybe it will, you know, targeting it for 3 years from now, but you're going to have to be studying that. So in the plan in this year, you have start gathering the committee, you know, so you're really working on a lot of strategic things over a 3-year cycle. There was a good quote, Sally reminded me, from one of the links I had at the bottom of the page here to look for some help. A Dr. Larry Anderson, who I really don't know at all, but he had an excellent quote in his material. He said, "The purpose of planning is not just to produce a document, but a continuous plan of action." And I think that says it all.
Very good. Let's move on. Before we leave the topic, we should let our listeners know that we're going to post a number of sample technology plans. That's probably a great place to start if you don't have one or are looking to revise yours. Take a look at what other people have done. So we've got 2 or 3 that we're going to post on the Wells Tech Wiki. That's wellstech.wetpaint.com. And just look in the school technology or classroom technology section under technology plans or something like that. I think it's one of the sub-pages under that area. So, and just if you've got one that you use, if you're a listener and have a technology plan that you'd be willing to share, don't hesitate to post a link up there to that. I think you can use attachments on those wiki pages. So please do not hesitate to do that. We would love for you to share, and I think that's a great way to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail, are you ready with a pick this week?
I am. I had a tough choice deciding which one, but I'm going to go with a program called Flowgram, Flowgram, just like it sounds, mm-hmm. flowgram.net.com, I forget. I'm going to have to look. I think Sally again has it down there in the notes, so I'll just trust her.
Let me try it out. Flowgram.com, right?
Flowgram.com
is not it. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. I forgot the W. I never know how these Web 2.0 sites go. Flowgram. Yeah. Go ahead, Gail.
This is an odd one because it does, you actually spell it like it really is spelled.
Yeah, no kidding. They left all the vowels in. What's wrong with them?
But this is a real neat Web 2.0 free application online. What I like about it, it's like a lot of others, really, except I just had a vision for this, going through this. For some reason, the students or the teacher can upload video pictures, and then what you do is you can, it's kind of like you make a voiceover. You can record your voice talking about the stuff. So you put the stuff together on this screen and you run it. It does this for you, you know, makes a little running show up your pictures and your videos with the controls. But you're able to have your voice right in there, saved right in there, explaining or pointing out or asking things about the things going by on the screen. So I think so often, you know, the levels of technology, that's a level one when you have kids do neat stuff and it looks cool, but really all they're doing is doing a book report, but they're doing it online, you know, using a different presentation tool, but really not doing anything too much higher level thinking. So I'm encouraging people to use tools like this for to get kids thinking. For example, put a picture up there that evokes a strong emotion, or we're studying the Civil War, so some original primary document, you know, photos from the Civil War, and why is the horse standing alone in the background and everybody else is laying on the battlefield dead? Well, we just read a book that talked about this soldier's affinity for horses. So then they could get into the whole thing about the horses and their part in the war and write about that, talk about that. I'd like to see it used, you know, kind of like a teaching tool. Think of a creative lesson that you can put together and present the lesson online with pictures and video and your voice explaining at proper places and eliciting things from kids. The adding of the voice, I think, is the powerful thing about this tool.
Very good. Thank you, Gail. Yep. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, this week I'm going to point people to JeopardyLabs.com. And actually, Gail mentioned this one as well when we were having our discussion before the show. And so it's something that the word is getting out to teachers, I believe, and something I think that could be very powerful even for a fun Bible class or catechism review or whatever. Anybody that needs to review topics can put it in the format of a Jeopardy game. And you do it all online with a free website, JeopardyLabs.com. You add a password as you're creating your own Jeopardy game so that you can go back in and edit it at some point in the future. But you don't have to create an account or anything. It's just that each Jeopardy game is password protected, so people can't just come out and edit it at will or whatever. And as you're building it, you basically put in the answers. It's the typical grid, 5x5 grid, so you'll need to have 25 questions in 5 different categories. You put in the answers and then you put in the question, and you can include HTML commands in there too. So if you want to, you know, italicize something or something like that, you can do that as you're building it. Pretty straightforward and easy to use. And then once you've completed it, you play the game online. And when you go into a game, it asks you how many teams you're going to have participating in your game. And then it has a little tally area at the bottom where you can indicate which team answered a question and whether they got it right or wrong, so that it adds the score or subtracts the score just like it would on the Jeopardy television show so that you keep a running total, or the computer does that for you, of your team's progress in the Jeopardy game. I know my husband's been using it for catechism review, and the kids just love it. They get really competitive in their teams, and you know, it's just a great way to review material with students, and I encourage you to check it out. They do have some featured Jeopardy games on their homepage. There's one about weather, one about elementary math, and one about writing reviews, so you can look at what the Jeopardy games look like. And you can browse their complete library, so other people could browse and find your Jeopardy games out there and use them as well. You know, I guess it's social in that nature that you can use each other's games and things. But very easy to put together. They make a big deal on the page of saying it's not PowerPoint. So I guess a lot of people have kind of jimmy-rigged Jeopardy games in PowerPoint. Probably not the easiest thing to do to make it work in PowerPoint and have all the linkages work and everything. This is all a Web 2.0 online free tool that you can use for review.
Very cool. Thanks, Sally. I'm gonna switch gears. I'm gonna switch my pick, Sally. Normally, when we do this show, we pick one. But since we started talking about Maui, I thought, boy, even though I'm not in Maui, at least I could have Maui as a desktop, as a wallpaper. So I've got a two-screen setup here, and I've got Maui surrounding my desk. Just a beautiful picture. The way I did that, and that's my pick, basically, is Google Images. You can find almost any image. This is just an amazing tool that was just entirely not possible 5 years ago. I've mentioned this before. I don't think I've ever made it a pick. But if you go to google.com/images, and one thing that I would encourage you to do is make sure you have Safe Search turned on. Just go to that page and then click on Preferences. And there's moderate Safe Search and Totally Safe and Totally Unsafe Search. So moderate Safe, I think, yields the best results, so it doesn't filter out too much of the stuff that you may need to see, but it doesn't force you to see all the garbage that's out there on the internet as well. But you just search on basically any search term. Like I searched on Maui wallpaper, and I had a page full of different pictures that I could pick from. Now, it's cool that you can do that to change your desktop or your wallpaper like I did, but I use this almost exclusively for a lot of my PowerPoint presentations. I don't really use PowerPoint anymore. I use SlideRocket. We've mentioned that in the past, too. But to try and make the presentation more compelling, I try and use full-screen photos. And there is just a wealth of those kinds of things. You'll get the hang of using the correct search terms to get the proper results, because it does base it on the file name first. I think that's the relevance criteria or a logarithm that it uses, but it does also search metadata and those kinds of things and data on the site that the photo is found. But google.com/images is a great repository to find all kinds of pictures that can go along with your presentation or really report or whatever it is that you're doing. Totally free. You have to be careful of copyright. Don't use something that's copyrighted. But essentially, most of what you'll find on Google you can use for educational purposes, for sure. That's fair use. So that would be my pick of the week, google.com/images.
So, Martin, that Maui image, does it have the Wells School that we're going to all visit in the background? Or?
Well, there's no buildings, actually, in the image. There's some palm trees, and that would be a nice location. So,
yeah, it's an outdoor school.
That's right. And what else would you need there? So,
right.
So I'm in the mood. All right, let's go to community feedback. We had a ton of people sharing their thoughts with us. Why don't we start with at the top, Sally?
You bet, Martin. We heard from Richard Travis, and he wrote to us to share a publishing tool. He's recommending, and Martin, maybe you can help me explain this, because I remember looking at the links, but it's just a really eye-catching way to be able to group together a lot of links and share them easily.
Scribd was the application that he was using, scribd.com, and basically it takes something that's unattractive, let's say a bland list of links and other things, and it formats them into what I guess I would call an ebook, where you have page turns and indexes and just a beautiful presentation of some very bland content and readable by anybody. It's all readable over the web. The best way to do it is to go to scrib.com and see, you know, we'll post a link to this in the show notes about what he has done. You can kind of see the dramatic difference that this takes by using this particular tool. So thanks for sharing that, Richard. That's good stuff.
Right. We also heard from Vicar Michael Johnson. Michael is serving this year at St. Andrews in Middleton, Wisconsin, and he wrote to tell us about a creative use of his iPod. Mm-hmm. They were looking for a solution for pre-service music to play like in the Narthex before the service as people were gathering. And he actually hooked his iPod into the church sound system and is playing some Christian background music that he's able to get over the internet radio Pandora for the pre-service music at their church. And it's working out really well for him. And I just thought that was a very creative use of an MP3 player. And
yeah, a lot of low and mid-level mixers now, soundboards, come with docks where iPods can be put in, and they just appear as another input source that could be used for playing sound. So if anybody's interested in, you know, that level of audio device for their congregations, look for that. I think that's a neat application. And boy, long gone are the days of vinyl and cassettes and CDs and DVDs. It's all on that iPod. Great application for it.
I'm just reminded about our choir recently practicing along with a CD that we had of music. And I did the same thing. I burned the CD to my MP3 player so that we didn't have to have a CD player there all clunky hooked up, you know, and it went through our sound system. We had better, you know, sound with that. Mm-hmm. So lots of applications there.
Very good.
Yep. Next, we heard from David Savatsky. David works in our World Missions office, and he had a couple of interesting things to share with us this week. First, he asked about an opportunity to send multiple text messages using SMS to like a list of people, to your church or whatever, being able to text message to a group. And Martin, I'm not sure if we've talked about that in the past, or maybe we need to do some research there and talk about that on a future show.
Mm-hmm. One thing that immediately comes to mind is Twitter. We've talked about Twitter in the past, basically a system that people could subscribe to or follow a particular Twitter feed, and that it would work exactly the same way. But there are other mechanisms to do that as well.
That's true. And when you follow someone on Twitter, you can add your mobile phone, and it will Twitter to your phone if that's what you choose.
Exactly.
You have that
right.
Option, mm-hmm. Turning that on and off. So good idea there. Next, David sent me an invite to join a Facebook group that has been set up for his church. Living Word in Waukesha, Wisconsin, now has a Facebook presence. And as far as I know, that might be the first church, Wells Church, that I'm aware of, that's built a Facebook group out there. And I thought that was an interesting thing, a way for people to connect, you know, outside of the physical church building on their Facebook page. So we'll be following Living Word and seeing what kind of activity they have going on there. I think that's a neat idea.
I bet we hear from some Wells Tech listeners who say, not so fast. Our church has one of those.
Okay.
We talked to who was it? Was it at Calvary here in Thiensville, Wisconsin, who had at least a Facebook group for his youth group? And that wasn't church-wide.
Yeah, Peter Schmidt.
Yeah,
from,
that's right. That's right.
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem.
Yeah,
that's
Falls.
Right. Yeah, I gave the wrong church credit for that. So mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Maybe
we
Calvary just, has have, one too, but I don't know.
We have a school one now, and it's like for alumni and teachers of Emmanuel Lutheran School. And since we started it, I just was amazed. I didn't know how it would go. And it's just grown by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. It's been really fun catching up with some people that went there years ago.
Yep, very good. Thanks for sharing, Dave.
Next, I had an email from Pastor Paul Jansen. He's at Holy Scripture Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And Pastor Jansen is always dabbling in some really creative web technology. This time, he's using Microsoft Photosynth, and he sent me a link. And I'm going to post it in the show notes because there may be others that are interested. And I'm just going to read what he had to say about it. Photosynth takes pictures of a common area and puts them together in a 3D environment. It took some tweaking, but it's not bad. On my first try, he did his sanctuary, actually. And he said he's still evaluating whether it would be web-worthy. It demands a download of 8.8 megs to install Photosynth. So it's something that I think would be something like Flash or whatever would be embedded in the browser ultimately. But right now it's just new technology. But I went and looked at Pastor Jansen's pictures. He actually took 88 photos of the inside of his sanctuary, a full 360-degree view and from all different angles. And with Photosynth, it stitched them all together, and so you can go and explore and zoom in and look at, in great detail at every angle of the Holy Scripture sanctuary, and it's really impressive to see.
Cool.
And I guess, you know, just kind of envision what you might use that far in your own setting or whatever, or at least, you know, have a glimpse into what we're going to be doing in the future and what kind of technology is being developed. It's pretty cool.
If I'm not mistaken, that is the same technology that was used for President Obama's inauguration speech, or the swearing in, where they asked everybody who was there to take a picture and upload to a particular site. And I believe it was Photosynth that they used to stitch all these photos together to create a very impressive 3D view of the President Obama holding up his right hand. And that's when they said everybody that they should take that photo. And then they uploaded it and they stitched all these things together. But, yeah, I think you're right. That is just a coming technology, and it's getting better and better. Now it's in the hands of us average Joes. So, very cool. Up next, we had an email or a voicemail from Ryan Rosenthal of Faith Lutheran School in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Let's play that. Here's Ryan.
Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Ryan Rosenthal calling from Faith Lutheran School in Fond du Lac, and just responding to your request for voicemail on free stuff and how to save money. Before I get into that, just a couple of things. Martin, I just wanted to say I didn't notice the bad sound quality on your interview today until you mentioned it, so thought it was fine. And Sally, quick question for you. You talked about sending out things over the Internet through the Google groups. What do you do for people that don't have Internet access? I know some people out in that area and my area as well don't have Internet access at home. How do you make sure you serve them? You also talked about the Cafe Press. I did get a gift certificate. The one negative I would say is it took about 3 months for me to get the coffee cup, or teacup in my case, that I wanted.
Yikes.
But now that I have gotten it, it's very nice. So thank you. Now, on to saving money. A couple just things. Obviously, there's tons of free resources on the Internet, and people can go to their favorite websites and find that. These were things I thought maybe would save a little bit more. One example, if you have a lab, I set up a program to automatically shut the computers down at the end of every day at 5 o'clock. Otherwise, they were on 24/7, 365, used up a lot of electricity. Having the program shut them down every day automatically saves me time and effort, saves the school money. If people are contributing money to, I believe, parish schools, we got a free subscription or included subscription to a site called learn360.com. It's online educational videos that you can stream or download and watch. If you're already giving money to parish schools, you might have a subscription to that, not even know it. Check it out. There is a 30-day free trial as well. It's very similar to United Streaming. I've already promoted LibriVox on the show before, where you get free audio of public domain books. They do have an RSS feed as well. Just mention that again. I do get Technology and Learning magazine for free. I've been getting it free for multiple years, and all I have to do is once a year send in a card that says, sure, I'll keep taking it for free. So that's a nice resource to read, and if I don't get around to every article, I don't feel guilty because it was free. Speaking of free, some areas will give free Internet access through the cable company. Not all areas. It depends on your cable company. But if you have free Internet or free, rather, cable in the classroom, you can sometimes get free Internet as well. There are some restrictions, but it is free. And those are the ideas I have to try and save your school some money, and hope everyone does well. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ryan, for that voicemail. Ryan was, I believe, the only other one who sent us a voicemail. So he has apparently figured that out, and hopefully others can do the same. That number, if you're interested in sending us a voicemail, now I got to look it up because I don't say it on air every time, but it is 414-375-2334. If you want to send us a voicemail, we would happily play it and share your thoughts. Sally, ask a couple questions.
Yeah, I was going to answer his question about what to do about people that don't have internet access. We are using Google Groups here in Sleepy Eye, and miraculously, actually, all our families do have internet access. But we gave them
the option. Right?
Yeah,
really?
Imagine that.
I can use that. I can use that when I talk to other congregations. If everybody in Sleepy Eye can have internet connection, what's wrong with you? All right.
Yeah, that's impressive, Sally. Was that after you came? Did they have that before?
After she opened up her franchise, yes.
Yeah. I showed up and explained the internet to them all. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I got this cool thing I want to show you.
Yeah, we are 100% covered in our Google group, but and that's for our school. We haven't done it for our church yet, so I should put some caveat there. But we did give people the option of having the paper as well, so that we still produce the paper if they want it sent home in that format. So that's basically how we manage that. You know, we'd like to sign you up for this. It's a trial thing. We're getting started with this. We know that you may have some concerns or questions about it or whatever, so we're willing to send home the paper for now. And that's how we're dealing with it for now. We do both, but we've cut down dramatically on the need for paper by mm-hmm. doing that.
Cool. So we'll have to put that on our Maui checklist, internet. That would be a requirement.
There
check
you
with
go.
The cable company.
That's right. All right. Next.
Next, we had a follow-up email from Pastor Krish Kuznitsky. He's at Christus in Delavan, Wisconsin. And he had written to tell us that they were putting video on their website. And if you just go to their website, I believe it's christuswells.org, and we'll have a link in our show notes, you can see the video of his most recent sermon right there on the homepage. They mm-hmm. have it embedded. But it just so happened that this was brand new in their congregation, so I followed up and said, tell us about your setup. And he wrote a really extensive email explaining all the different equipment that they got. They just really invested in audio and video equipment heavily in his congregation recently. And so with all the wonderful information he shared, I mean, from different microphones that they purchased, different mixer boards, and, you know, the whole shebang, how they're duplicating DVDs, the whole bit. We basically embedded all of his information into the Wells Tech Wiki because we have a whole section on church media, and his information just fit really well there, and I think will be really useful to congregations that are looking to set up their own church media equipment. So check that out. It's at wellstech.wetpaint.com, and you'll find all the specs on the Christus audio-video setup embedded in that church media section there on the wiki.
Thanks, Chris, for sharing. That's really the important part about a wiki is that contribution side. So keep those ideas coming. And then last but not least, Sally?
We heard from Jason Smith, who's at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. There you go. Gethsemane Lutheran School. And he was listening to our last show where we made some comments about mass email solutions. And he wrote in to share his own solution. I'll just read what he wrote. I heard in your last podcast that someone was looking for solutions for mass emailing. A solution that we use here at Gethsemane Lutheran School in Omaha is a service provided by MailChimp.com. So MailChimp.com. They allow you to create and manage email lists and give you the opportunity to create custom HTML emails. You can embed their form into your website to ease management of the list. One great thing about the service is that you can track the number of opens from the messages you send out. It's super easy to use and it's very inexpensive. 600 emails per month can be sent for free. Ah, I like that word. Mm-hmm. Additional credits can be purchased at discounted rates for schools and nonprofits. So you may want to check out MailChimp.com.
Sweet.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, awesome. Keep those comments coming. WellsTech.Wells.net is a place to go. We have many other avenues to do that. WellsTech@Wells.net is the email. We have a listserv. We mentioned the voicemail, delicious tags. All of those are spelled out in plain English on our website, wellstech.wells.net. Thanks, everybody, for contributing. Now, up next week, we are going to have a spirited conversation about, well, I hope it's spirited, about digital outreach. or outreach, what I call outreach in a digital world. I've been writing a workshop that's going to go out in the fall through our board of our Commission on Evangelism. It's an honor to be asked to write that course. I'm going to share some thoughts I have about how to reach out in this digital world that we have, whether it be personal evangelism or congregational outreach, whatever it is. So all kinds of cool tools, techniques, approaches. We talk a little bit about planning there as well. So tune in next week. We'll also have an interview with Pastor Ken Fisher from here in Milwaukee, who is kind of the idea man behind whataboutjesus.com. So maybe in prep for that, you should visit whataboutjesus.com. Very cool site, geared specifically for those people either new to Christianity or who don't know about Jesus, and asking the question, what's the story with Jesus? That's a great site to go to and to recommend your unchurched friends, family members to go to as well. So we look forward to that interview. Let's close the show, as we always do, with a Wells featured artist this week. It is Dawn Gallar with her song Christ Be My Leader from her album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.